Welcome to the Love and Life After Divorce podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. On this podcast, you will feel empowered to release the feelings of shame, trauma, isolation, and sense of loss that can often come from a difficult marriage, painful breakup, and divorce. You will be given the insights and inspiration you need to love yourself fiercely, be sure of your worthiness, and to handle the challenges of post-divorce life with strength and humor. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love and Life After Divorce podcast. I'm here today with a really special guest. She's a journalist, an entrepreneur, a podcaster. She lives a traveling life. She's all over Mexico right now. And she just had a very special birthday. She's spending her birthday weekend here on the podcast with us. So everyone, I'm so excited for you to meet Amanda Chen. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Okay, so when I found you, we were on a forum and you were talking about a project that you had worked on called 100 Masked Men. And I was incredibly fascinated by this project and knew I had to talk to you more. So, Amanda, would you tell us about this project, 100 Masked Men, and what was your inspiration for starting that?
Mm-hmm. So I coach a lot of other women entrepreneurs to help them grow and succeed in their businesses. And mainly my focus is on developing more self-worth and confidence to sell your products and feel more confident when you go into a boardroom or when you speak to other men. And whenever there would be shortcomings with my clients, I would get very frustrated because usually it has to do with a male person, like a colleague, a husband, a boyfriend, something. And the work is doing so well. And then suddenly, you know, we just crash and burn and we have to start all over again. And I realized how discompassionate I was towards my clients about this. And that was actually putting them off from telling me more about their relationships with men. And that was just a wake-up call for me to realize that I didn't have a very good relationship with men. And I was projecting that negative behavior and assumption and projection into my clients and making them feel uncomfortable about sharing positive experiences about men. So I had to really check myself at that point. And I began the 100 Masked Men series during the wake of the pandemic when we were all wearing masks. And the confusion was, are we wearing masks to protect ourselves or are we wearing them to protect others? And are there other invisible masks that we're all wearing and questioning if this is good for me or is this good for you? Or why am I even doing this? Am I just blindly doing this just to follow whatever someone else is telling me to do? What are the expectations? What are the implications? What are the potential harms of me obliging or disobeying? Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of how this all began. And it was also, I was very curious about gender linguistics and how men speak to men, how women speak to women. And then when they speak to each other, how some of that dialogue might crumble because of those expectations. And I chose 100 masked men. Originally, I was going to choose 300, and I thought that was a little bit ambitious. So I dialed it down to 100, and I thought, I'm going to choose 100 men that are outside of my personal network. And that was really important to me so that I wouldn't be biased in my experience with men, because I've already had a bad experience. In order to improve my own relationships with men, I needed to see what the perspectives and lifestyles were like of other men in the entire world. We only know what we're used to, what we're familiar to. And a lot of women's circles that I was involved in were all women that were suffering from trauma from men. So of course, we would all have this narrow-minded, angry view towards men. And I realized I really need to open up. And I conducted almost this entire year of interviews abroad while I was in Mexico. So yeah, just finding the most random strangers, getting them to talk really honestly and openly, and realizing that in order to get that response from men, I needed to be at that space too, because you can only meet people at the level that you're at.
Okay, I have so many questions for you because what you just said, there are so many nuggets in there and so many things I want to dive in. I was like frantically taking notes. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is this really powerful esoteric question that started all of this about the invisible masks that we are wearing. Oh my gosh, I feel like this could be a whole book in and of itself. Are they good for me? Are they good for them? What is the purpose? Wow. Okay. So that driving question led you to say, I need to learn more about men. So my audience are women that have experienced divorce or are going through divorce or have experienced divorce. And so our experience often has a lot of negative emotions around what we've experienced in our marriages. And a lot of times that is around the men that were in our lives, the man that we loved. So my question with you is, how did interviewing these men help you with your relationship with men?
That is a tough question to answer. I don't think it's as simple to respond to because I think it requires your own self journey as you go and learn what other men are going through. In the first, maybe first half of interviews, I was not present. I was there just to have people to yell at on my platform. You know, I didn't know how to appreciate, what I had at that time. And if I was full of hate and expectations and ways to prove that I'm right, then I will be a self-fulfilling prophecy and that will always happen. So if you are being hateful or you have hateful thoughts or negative thoughts, you are hate, you are negativity, you are these things. So I had to learn to realize if I'm seeking positivity, if I'm seeking hope, then I have to be the hopeful one. I need to be open to that. And when I started to talk to people with that mentality, I really did get a change in the responses of the men that I was speaking to. And as much as I found as wide of a diversity of people as I could, at the end of the day, it's really just about you and what you project, and you'll get exactly the same thing that you're projecting out.
Okay, this is very mind-blowing right now. This is, and I think this is such an important point to hover on for just a second. That what we are expecting, what we are projecting is what we're going to get back. And so if we are expecting men to hurt us, men to not treat us correctly, if that is what we're expecting, then we project that attitude and that's exactly what comes back. How did you make that shift? That is not an easy shift to make.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it began. I think I was surrounded by a lot of really positive women, really strong, confident, older women that I was looking up to. And they just had shitty experience after shitty experience of men. And I was just like, how do you still stand up strong? How are you still hopeful? How are you all of these things? And I realized that when you are a woman that knows your own worth, it's not going to be accepted in society very well. And you have to maintain that challenge. And at the end of the day, it's not your problem if other people aren't going to receive it well. There's only going to be the tiniest group of men that are going to meet you at that level, and that's cool. If you want to be popular choice, if you want to be the girl that all of the guys are ogling at the bar, then you have to succumb to what society expects out of you. If you don't, then cool, you'll get that one gem, and all you need is one.
Yeah.
You don't need to satisfy the entire room. And I think that's the learning that I had to realize, both in like wanting specific guys on the show or wanting the interview to come across differently or wanting the guys to like me or whatever it was, and noticing that like, this is a research paper. This is just for me to understand how to even communicate to men and where are the gaps. That's nothing to do with whether or not I even like this guy. And I started to realize how a lot of the female audience that I have that would come back to me and they would say, oh my God, how come this guy never answered this? Or like, I really don't like him. I can't believe he said that. All these things. And I was like, it doesn't matter. all that matters is that the story is told, the truth is told, and his version of the truth is told, and he's got the space to do so. And that's the power of perspective. And that's it. We don't have anything else than that. So all of these judgments we need to remove and then just keep the story for what it is, take the truth at where it's at. And maybe that's that person's full capacity of their ability to express themselves emotionally. Maybe they don't even have enough vocabulary. So that's all they know how to say.
Amanda, you're really fascinating. Your wisdom, your insight, the way you look at things is so healthy. And what I really appreciate in the way you're explaining this is you're explaining to us that you went on a journey to get there, that you didn't wake up and you're just here removing judgment and accepting people for who they are and realizing that you are a gem and there may only be one other gem out there and that's okay. This is really fascinating. What gave you that ability to have that confidence about yourself and your self-worth and knowing, being able to strip away the judgment and just hear the story?
I think the real switch for me was when I went on a 10-day silent meditation retreat. And when you go into silence, I didn't know this at the beginning, but you can't even look at people. You can't maintain eye contact because that is a form of communication. You can't smile, nod, anything. So that I was surprised about. First, I thought, okay, cool. I can just go on a digital detox and be quiet and not speak to people, but I didn't know I can't acknowledge people. And this is when I realized how much I wanted people to acknowledge me, how much we just acknowledge people blindly as we cross the street or something, but then we look away. So why do I still want someone to look at me just to look away for me to pretend to ignore them too? And it was really strange to realize this. And also in this retreat, you couldn't look at yourself. So you also couldn't look at the mirror. And I remember I was drinking some tea and really enjoying this tea. It was a hibiscus cinnamon tea. And I was just slurping it. Well, this one day, and I was all the way at the bottom of the cup, and I was like, oh my God, there's a spider. And then, because I saw these like long legs, and then I realized it was just my lashes that were all like straggly and all over the place. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I look like. Because I haven't, you know, combed my lashes in the longest time. So it was hilarious to have that moment. And recognize the silliness of what you think you look like, or why do you act the way you are? Why do you do things for who? Who's looking at you? And why does it matter? What really matters at the end of the day? What are you looking for? And we don't spend enough time doing that. We just want to get the job done. And then we want to receive that reward to say, oh, I've done the job. So I noticed how a lot of the times I was just collecting random guys and not consciously choosing the types of guys that were on my show. Eventually I was like, oh my God, I'm almost at 100. I need to be more careful about the ones I'm selecting. And this is when I realized a lot of the times when I was speaking to men and going through all of the calls and engaging whether or not they would be a good fit on the call, I never said no. I just allowed them because I thought, oh my God, I've bothered them. I've called them. I did a pre-screen. I did all these things. I have to have them on the show. And then luckily the universe would just, I don't know, protect me somehow. That's how I believe it, because some guys would just no show. And I'd be like, oh my God, thank God I don't have to interview this person. Like totally was not a good fit for the show, or they would call in sick or whatever. And then things would just drop off naturally. So I think that was another moment for me to start practicing how to say no, how to speak about what this project is about that has nothing to do with ego. We're not projecting anything about who you are in society because it's anonymous. So you're not going to get that self-promotion. You're not going to get that validation. We're not talking about dating, you know? So there's actually no real purpose to having this conversation except to expose the truth and express yourself. If you're going to be open to that, fantastic. If you're not, that's fine too, but you just won't be in the conversation. So it was healthier in that respect to be like,
yeah, this is what I want to do. If you want to be on this journey with me, cool, you can join in. Otherwise, if you don't, I'm not changing who I am for your comfort. And I had to learn how to deal with that.
I feel like that saying right there is something that can be applied in almost every relationship of our lives, in every situation in our life of, all right, here's who I am. Here's what's happening. You're either here for it or you're not. And okay. And if you're not here for it, somehow that's a gift for me because you weren't ready to be here for it. Wow. That's great. Thank you, Amanda.
Yeah.
What is the biggest surprise from this project?
Biggest surprise. I think the biggest surprise is my own journey. In the beginning, I was very hurt. I think I started this project because I wanted the last guy that I was in a situationship with that I was just loving so hard for. I wanted all of these 100 guys to answer for him. You know, I think that's what we all want. We want someone to answer for this guy that won't respond to you about why things didn't work out the way they did.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I never got that resolution. I never got that closure, but I found my own version of that. And that was surprising to me. Also, as a gift, I'm not sure how you want to look at it, but my relationship to sex was very important because it had to do a lot with gender. And I realized how much I looked at sex as a tool to prove my value in a relationship. Oh.
Yeah.
So it's like, if we don't have sex every day, there's something wrong with our relationship. He's getting sex somewhere else. If I try to have sex with him in the morning and he doesn't want to, there's something wrong. I have to figure out what this is. Otherwise, our relationship is on the rocks. So everything was about sex. And if we're arguing, I could just have sex and then that would solve everything, right? So there was this weird power that's not actually power in a relationship because we're using sex as a tool. And you don't know what sex is anymore. Is it power? Is it control? Is it none of it is ever intimacy. None of it is ever togetherness. It's always used as a tool. And that's what I learned. And now I apply that in my relationships where sex is just completely off the table. Whereas before, sex was on the table and I wanted to talk about how it was in usage on the table. Is it a side? Is it a main dish? Like, what are we doing? How does it look like on the table? Can we talk about consent? Can we talk about where we stand in our values of sex? To now, like, I'm completely non-sexual and, you know, I practice relationships that don't have sex so that it doesn't have any contribution to our value of the relationship anymore.
Fascinating. Wow. That is a surprising turn there.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. I definitely resonate with the conversation around sex changing when you understand yourself differently and you understand relationships differently. I actually just had this conversation with my boyfriend a couple weeks ago where I told him that in my past relationships, I had a lot of anxiety around sex and if we weren't having it enough and what did that mean and all of that. And he and I, we are very passionate with each other, but at the same time, the passion, it's just a communication. It's just where sex is one of our forms of passion, but we're so connected in so many other ways that it doesn't matter if we have sex every day or if we have sex once a week, we don't feel the lack. We don't feel like something's wrong because we're communicating with each other. We're so connected in so many ways. So I resonate with that idea of it no longer being a tool and there being so many other ways to connect. I like that. So what has changed for you other than the sexual piece? What's changed for you in your relationships with men since doing this experiment?
I think I realized there's a huge gap in our concept of platonic relationships. The only times men and women have platonic relationships is if it's like a relative in law or it's, you know, like a sister-in-law, brother-in-law, or it's your best friend's wife or husband, and you have to be friends. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea as like being colleagues or neighbors, mm-hmm. and you happen to have to talk to each other, but there's no real bond in that way. Mm-hmm. And then if that relationship were ever to end, either that relationship ends too, or you rekindle some kind of awkward sexual connection if there was one. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it's kind of like we're waiting to have sex with the next person that's kind mm-hmm. of in our vicinity. And it's bringing our own self-control down to this level of we're all savages and we're all, you know, we can't control our bodies and we have to always do this. And that's because there's no explanation for a healthy platonic relationship between men and women. You only see like women with gay men or mm-hmm. people that are not in the same sexual orientation to have a friendship. Mm-hmm. So you never see two straight people having a totally platonic friendship, not ever thinking about that. And everyone's hot, they're attracted to each other, it's fine. But there is this boundary if we don't want to do that because our friendship is important. And I think that's another element of sex being used as a tool, or maybe it's something that we have not figured out how to control ourselves or understand that it is a tool and that it shouldn't overpower us or dictate what our relationships are. And that is also prioritizing romantic relationships too much by thinking like, oh, I love this person. Like they're so great to hang out with. I really like their personality. We have similar interests. Like, oh, that means like if everything's great, we should just have sex. Mm-hmm. Because that is like the epitome of like successful relationship, whatever. And that doesn't make any sense. Like, why should that be the result? Mm-hmm. Like the best relationship should be, oh, we buy each other gifts for Christmas, or we have like a fun group chat or anything else, mm-hmm. but we don't celebrate these things. Instead, it has to be this like, oh, we have to be naked and intimate. And that means this is like the best version of two humans coming together mm-hmm. and having a connection.
Mm, that's fascinating. I feel like we could mm-hmm. mull that over for a long time. So I want to go back to your original thesis question mm-hmm. of, are there invisible masks that we're wearing? Who are they good for? Why are we doing this? Do you feel like your original question got answered? Or do you feel like you will be on a lifelong journey to answer this question?
I think it is a more complicated question. Mm-hmm. When I first came in, I thought it was, what are the masks that men are wearing to satisfy their relationships with women? Mm. And a lot of those came from unresolved trauma between their fathers and their mothers, right? Mm-hmm. Either to satisfy their love for their mother that's being translated into their romantic relationships with women, or it's how do I compete with my father, or how do I gain the respect of my father? So I have to do these things. And there was this level of commitment to proving something and validating yourself for this, and this is what you will receive as a reward. And the reward is a woman, multiple women, women in general. And that really bothered me because that made women a commodity mm-hmm. and made women look like they're not another human. They're just a thing to collect, as well as mm-hmm. wealth and security and all of these other elements in life. So that part was a little bit disappointing to hear, but it is a fact of where we live in this patriarchal society. And it's something that we can't ignore. And I think it was really good to have a lot of men express it in various different ways. So either it could be from a religious context, it could be from a class context, but it was always to satisfy a certain need that they didn't have at that time. So that's what I learned about masks. But what I didn't know is that we are all wearing masks. So now we are two people in masks meeting each other. You can never know if one person takes off the mask. So you could be one person masked and one person unmasked. You'll never know if both of us are unmasked. And I think that is the scary part of how do we maintain this authenticity to ourselves? I always ask the question, like, am I doing this because I want to, or am I doing this because I think that the other person wants me to? And most of the time that a lot of men have told me is the reason they always get into arguments is because they are not truthful. And we're, you know, quite aware of this when this happens. They're not truthful because they're afraid of hurting the person that they're speaking to. And to avoid this conflict, they make the executive decision to lie or say something else to soothe this other person, thinking that this person can't take the truth. And once we all just tell the truth, regardless of this person being able to take it or not, I think we'll have better conversations and actually be surprised that these people can actually take the truth and prefer it. We just keep protecting people and avoiding uncomfortable conversations. But actually what we do is hurt people through that. Yes. So it's really on learning how to do that and practice being truthful as much as you can and kind of saying things on an ongoing basis and being consistent about those truthful comments, even though it could be like completely mundane, just to be like, hey, truthfully, I didn't really like breakfast today. It was kind of overcooked, you know, just truthfully, that is just what it is. Instead of like, oh, great, thank you for breakfast and like express gratitude and leave, you know, we can do better than that. And we can have more deeper connections with people if we add in that truthfulness.
I think that's that lesson applies to us as well. Like, yes, men will avoid discomfort by telling a half truth or a lie, but oh my gosh, as women, we do that. Like, I think we're, I think it's almost in our DNA because we are raised to protect everybody and we're raised really even to deny ourselves and what's important to us and just be nice and be kind to everyone. And so, if we really fiercely practice being truthful, as Martha Beck calls, you know, living in your integrity, and if we can be truthful in all of our relationships with our friends, with our family, with our romantic interests, then we bring people in our lives that also practice that integrity and that honesty. And oh my gosh, it's a hard thing to do. I mean, your breakfast example is the perfect example of how hard this is to do. Because in my head, I'm like, oh, I couldn't tell somebody that they didn't do a good job with breakfast. That's terrible. But it's it's such a simple way to practice being honest. And you don't have to be mean, but you can be honest. I prefer less salt on my eggs. Yeah. Thanks.
I think this was really funny. I was recently living with a man. And we had two bedrooms and I was like, oh man, why did I agree to do this? I don't know this person. I'm traveling through Mexico. Like anything could happen. He could rob me or whatever. And I was thinking of these crazy things. And then I had another friend that also was a man that was coming by to visit. And we all decided to cook together, which was really great to experience. And this is really my experience in trying to create more platonic relationships with men and be like, okay, cool. What would it be like if we all made food together? And I'm a vegan. And so I'm already complicated with the request of what I need to make. And it was really funny. One of the guys picked up the pan and he was like, yeah, we could roast the vegetables in this pan. And the other guy was like, oh, you don't want to put in this pot. So these guys were kind of arguing over which tool to use, over the pot or the pan. And the one guy was like, let's just do it in this pan. I think he just made the executive decision. And I think this is when men communicate with men that I've learned. Somebody has to be alpha. Whereas with women, there is no alpha. It's just women together bonding. So somebody eventually overpowered the other and was the alpha. And he said, okay, I'm going to use this pan. And then he looked at the pan and was like, oh, but this pan isn't really like very well cleaned. And that was actually my roommate's pan that he just, you know, made eggs on earlier today. And he just started laughing because it was clearly his bad job in cleaning the pan. But this other guy had no clue, obviously, and he just laughed about it. But that's all it will be. Someone will just laugh about it because there's nothing rude or intentional about it. It's kind of like, this pan is just dirty. I need to use it. I'm going to comment on the fact that it wasn't cleaned very well, but that's it. I'm not going to say you didn't clean it very well. I'm not going to say you're a terrible person or you're not a clean person. I think that's when it becomes a problem, when you identify the problem with a person. If you just said, hey, this breakfast wasn't the best, it was undercooked, flat statement, that is truth. Mm-hmm. Like that it was undercooked for these reasons. And that's it. So I think once we can detach ourselves from that identifier to be like, that means I'm a terrible cook. It doesn't. It just means this food today was undercooked, or this, like, not even this food, this one meal was undercooked.
Oh, that is such a perfect example, Amanda. Such a perfect example. You bring it to real life, real thing. Don't connect judgment to it. Don't connect it to a person. Just mm-hmm. make a statement about what's happening. I love that. All right. So we're about to wrap up this part and move into kind of the fun section. Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up here, do you have any last things you want to say to women that are trying to heal their relationships with men, heal their relationships with themselves? What word of advice would you have?
I would say that the relationships you've had before are not the relationships you're going to have. Mm. You're always going to have better, because every decision you make today, you're going to be better for it, for making those decisions. Mm. So we don't have to overthink and feel insecure about what's going to happen next, because it's always going to be an improvement from whatever was yesterday. Mm.
I love that. And it will be an improvement, especially if we're aware and we're trying to improve and we're working on ourselves. Love that. Thank you, Amanda. Mm-hmm. This has been such a powerful conversation. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours and hours, because you just give little truth bombs and mind-blowing things in like every other sentence. There's so many things we could talk about. But let's go ahead and move into our little rapid fire question section. This is where we get to know you. So, do you have a book that you're reading right now that you're enjoying?
Right now, I'm reading The Art of Memoir. It's by Mary Carr, and I'm in the midst of writing my own memoir. So I think it's really cool, because she talks about the art of the truth, because sometimes I want to enamor the truth and make it sound snazzy, have some cliffhangers before chapters. And it's really about trusting the narrator, especially if it's a memoir, it's just you and your recount of the truth, and your truth is going to be flawed already. So it's supposed to be your nonsensical thought process. So don't try to conceal it and make it look like it's cooler than it is, because the truth is actually really cool already the way it is.
Yeah. And you do have a cool story. I can hear a TEDx talk or TED stage. Like we're going to be hearing more from you, because you're such an eloquent speaker. You are a deep thinker. You think about things differently than a lot of people. And we're going to be hearing a lot more from you. So this is exciting. Yes, I'm excited about your memoir. So we'd love to be on your book tour stop when your memoir comes out. Just putting it out there. All right. Next question is, they're making a movie of your life and you get to pick three songs for the soundtrack. What are the three songs?
So this is really challenging. I was thinking about this earlier. So as well as not having sex anymore, I cut out so many things recently. I cut out drinking alcohol. I cut out meat. So I've just been a recent vegan. Mm. I cut out music. I cut out TV. I cut out music.
Wow.
And I've never been that into music.
Okay.
I think that was one of the things I just absentmindedly participated in, because that's what people thought was a thing to do. So I guess we should always have music as ambient stuff around. And I realized how distracting it was. So if there would be any way to have a soundtrack where it would just be like a cappella stuff, it might be hymns, might be mantras. Yeah, that's what I would think of what the music would be. And I think that'd be challenging.
So but that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Challenging.
That's a different answer. So
it is different, but I like that. And I think, you know, why make a movie of your life and do it the same way as everybody else? That would be a fascinating soundtrack. Got me thinking. All right. So in my community, I really love encouraging the women in my community to take risks and to grow and to change and to do the hard thing. What is a risk you've taken recently that you're really glad you said yes to?
Recently, I took the risk to take paddleboarding. I am not a water person at all.
Okay.
And I randomly decided I'll take paddleboarding to watch the sunrise. I just wanted to watch the sunrise. I wanted to be by the water. And I never go into water. I'm really scared of it. And I didn't want to fall at all. And that was just inevitable. I remember the first time I fell, I didn't expect to fall. You know, I was like already afraid to even stand. I was just kind of on my knees most of the time. Once I stood and fell after a couple seconds, I just like nosedived into the water. And after that, it was so humbling. I was like, oh my God, what a failure. And then I realized, oh my God, all I'm doing is falling into the water. This is great. I'm in this deep ocean. Why am I complaining? And then I came back up and I started to just voluntarily hop up and down into the water and off. So it didn't matter so much about holding the balance and being perfect and staying dry. It was kind of just like, let me just keep playing around in the water and watch the view. So it was definitely worth the risk in that way.
Isn't it fascinating how when we're afraid of something happening, that's exactly what happens?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I was given a paddleboard as a gift from my boyfriend. And that is like the first time on it, oh my God, I'm going to fall. And you do, like if you're afraid of falling, that's what's going to happen. But then once you're like, hey, you know, like I'm just balancing on this. I'm out here enjoying. Let me kick my feet in the water, then it's a totally different experience. I love your attitude of, well, I'm just going to jump in. What did I fall into? I fell into an ocean. Oh, well, let me fall into it again. Let me do it purposefully and joyfully. And I think that's a really good lesson for life. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful thought to leave the listeners on of jump in. It's just the ocean. Jump in. I love that. So I definitely know that my listeners are going to want to find you. How can people find you? How would you like them to reach out to you?
People can find me on Instagram at Miss Amanda Chen. Or you can also check out my podcast. It's also the Miss Amanda Chen Show podcast. And I have a new episode every Wednesday. I just wrapped up the 100 Must Men series. So I'll be releasing a summary of all 100 episodes. And then throughout the next year, I think I'm going to be bringing in some tidbits of all of the learnings that I've collected along the way and really focus on how to live life in and out of transition. Because the one thing that we are consistent in is change, and we don't focus on that. We always think about the past or the future, and the only way to stay present is to really look at that transitionary time.
And isn't it all? It's all transition time. It's all transition time. I love that. This has been such a pleasure. I feel like I have grown so much with this conversation. And I definitely want to interact with you again. Can't wait for your book to come out and for us to celebrate that together. I hope you have an absolutely beautiful day. And listeners, please, please, please reach out to me. Let me know what you got out of this podcast episode. And interact with Amanda. She is absolutely fascinating, and your day will be made better from interacting with Amanda. Thank you, everyone, and have a beautiful day. Thank you so much for joining us this week on the Love and Life After Divorce podcast. If anything resonated with you in the podcast, I would love to hear about it. Please DM me on my Instagram at Tiffany Kane. Also, if this podcast makes you think of a friend that could benefit from hearing this message of support and empowerment, please share it with her. And remember, this podcast is sponsored by the Love and Life After Divorce membership group. We would be so thrilled to have you join. Have a beautiful day, and remember, of course, it's all about you. #self-love.